Well, greetings all. My name is Paul Weber, and I'd like to welcome you to the Teleclass Bedpan Decontamination, Manual versus Mechanical. It is a great honor to have you with us today. Gerti van Knippenberg-Gordebeck has worked as an infection control nurse in the Netherlands since 1978 and is currently working as an international consultant. She's been active in the Dutch Association of Infection Control Practitioners for some 30 years, including 8 years as chair of the annual conference committee and 5 years as the delegate for the International Federation of Infection Control. In fact, I first met Gerti at the IFIC conference in Malta several years ago. Until recently, Gerti has been the editor-in-chief of the International Journal of Infection Control, which serves thousands of readers around the globe, and it really has done a lot even to promote the Teleclass education program in many of these nations, many of them developing nations. So I'm very grateful to that. But before Gerti begins, let me also say a very big thanks to Arjo for their sponsorship of this Teleclass. Teleclass education materials are available at very low cost to those of us in developed nations and at no cost whatsoever to people in developing nations. And one of the main reasons that we can do that is through the generous sponsorship of companies like Arjo. Thanks very much to John and Lisa and everyone at Arjo for your support of infection control education in general. And now to present the Teleclass Bedpan Decontamination, Manual versus Mechanical. Joining us from the Netherlands, I give you my friend, Gerti.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you for this invitation, and thanks, Ayo, to make this possible. Bedpan decontamination. When I told my friends and my relatives that I should give again, I say again, a lecture and Teleclass about bedpans, they are all laughing and say, how can you tell 1 hour about bedpans? And I think it's just giving a patient a bedpan and then an ex-patient a bedpan. That is part of nursing work, but talking about that. But it took me 30 years ago when my microbiologist made me aware about the risk about bedpans. And since then, I did a lot of investigations and search about this. And my nickname in Holland is Miss Bedpan Washer. So here I am, and I start with this lecture. Next slide, please. First, to give you an impression how I get my opinions and how I learned in Holland, I will tell you one slide about infection prevention in the Netherlands. First of all, for 20 years, we were working all with the Dutch national guidelines. And the health inspector says this is our professional standard and every healthcare setting should work and should use comparing these guidelines. You can find them on the website. It's also a lot of them in English. And they are very practical and very basic. So we have also, and I worked on that for a long time ago, guidelines for bedpan washers, the Dutch guidelines. So, because I have time to work at bedpans, because we are a rich country and every hospital has for a long time already one infection control practitioner, 50% of them are nurses, 50% of them are lab technicians, one person per 250 beds. But per 2006, we changed our norm, and now we try to have one per 178 beds and one medical microbiologist for 1857 beds. And this makes a difference, and I realize that for other countries who don't have that luxury position, but I wanted to tell you that first. Next slide, please. Coming to bedpans and urine bottles. Why a lecture about that? Is there a risk for a healthcare-associated infection from handling, from urine bottles, from bedpans? In a lot of countries, they don't want to name this, and they say it from human waste containers. Yes, I think there is. And my microbiologist, I mentioned before, he gave me one of the first publications written in this slide in 1959, Gastrointestinal international infections traced to bedpans and urinals. That was one of the first. In this time, a lot of publications appeared, but then I think there was no interest about publications anymore about this subject, because the Western world, a lot of people were thinking, I guess, that's my opinion, everything is correct now and every hospital has a good system for bedpans and urinals to clean them and to decontaminate them. Next slide, please. Now, if you go to the last part of this slide, the PubMed, then if you're looking for the relation between bedpan and infections, and you see between nosocomial infections or hospital-associated infections, or as we call it now, healthcare-associated infections, you find only minor publications. If you go to Google, then you have much more luck. Then you find more publications, but it's not all publications. It's also advertising of companies. But here you have more luck to find articles about the relation between bedpan urinals infections. So the PubMed, mostly used by a lot of professionals, because so many people still are thinking Google is not very interesting, it's only for the public and not for the professionals, then you think you cannot find any publication, so it will not be a problem. But I have a different thinking. Next slide, please. This picture, you see a lot of infections all over the world. And if these infections appear, then mostly these outbreaks are news. The hepatitis C, most recently now in the U.S., we still have different publications about the bird flu, and all these are coming into the media. But we know as professionals that there are more victims from healthcare-associated infections. We must realize millions of patients each year, and these patients are not coming in the news. Only if there's a big outbreak in a hospital and there is quiet time, that there is not a lot of interesting international or national news, then you have the chance that it will be on the news. But the rest, it's only these, and then I say comparing to the healthcare-associated infections, are these very seldom, and these are news. Next slide, please. But we all know healthcare-associated infections, 5-10% of all the people admitted to hospitals get an infection. And from these, 5% get gastrointestinal infections. And to the left side, you see a slide from the CDC, from the U.S., from 1990 till 1979, and then you see with the red pile, 5% has a gastrointestinal. Recently, last year, we did a prevalence survey, and you see the same figure of all these infections, 5% is gastrointestinal. I think that is not that much like wound infections and pneumonias and urine tracts, but if you realize the people will be very, very sick, need very much care if they are vomiting and have diarrhea, and it takes a lot of pressure for the nurses. Next slide, please. And then you see the Clostridium difficile associated disease, and that's very often in the news now because it's not only diarrhea, but a lot of people develop Pseudomonas membranes colitis, toxic melanoma, sepsis, and the last years we had a lot of deaths. The reason for Clostridium is mostly by giving too much antimicrobial medicine. Then there is a growth of C. diff and the suppression of normal flora. The transmission, and we all know that, is mostly through the hands of healthcare personnel, from nurses or other personnel. And then through the hands and through the features, the environmental contamination. Next slide, please. This is a number that I found on the web from the death certificates in England and Wales. And then you see that around 55% had a mention of C. diff, and I think this is shocking. Next slide, please. How is the rest of the world with the C. diff, and especially with the epidemic strain? And then to the left in the U.S., you see since a long time already, since 1996, we have already the C. diff, the epidemic strain, and there is a severe rise in it. In the Netherlands, and this is a map of my country, very small country, in June 2001, we had the first outbreaks in Dutch hospitals and nursing homes with the epidemic strains. But our national institute said it's only the epidemics, but it's not a real severe problem like they have in Canada and the US and in Belgium and France. Next slide, please. Overall, infections in healthcare must be minimized. And I think prevention through better hygiene and better infection prevention measures. This is a must and a responsibility for all of us working in healthcare. Prima non nostra, do no harm. So easy to say these words. And you hear them a lot in the last conferences or as title for national and international conferences. And the pictures is Florence Nightingale, the nurses recognize them, and Hippocrates, and the physicians among us will recognize them. And in a symposia from accreditation, education training about protocols, evidence-based symposia, best practice process, everybody is talking about do no harm. First, do no harm. Yes, we know all that. But is the message clear? And is it given to the right audience? Are all the nurses, physicians from the bedside, are they going to the symposia and hear this? And are we translating all what we hear to the bedside healthcare workers? How is the frequency about education? Education, every conference I attend, I say, I hear the word education, education, education. But if I ask my nurses in the hospital, they say, well, we don't have time for that, or I only work part-time and I can't go back in the afternoon or in the evening for a lecture, so there's no time for education. And we have so much to learn, so it's okay. How is the climate in the institute? How are the managers about education? Give they time for that or show any interest in it? Do we all follow the same theory? And how is the practice? Next slide. The practice for healthcare-associated infections, the risk factors. Lack of knowledge, I think this is number one. Even in well-developed countries, we think as infection control professionals that people know what's going on. But if you really ask deeper or audit, then you are shocked and see that there's a lot of lack in the knowledge. Lack of equipment or aging equipment. They bought something and then they never looked around it. Limited resources and budget, a problem you hear not only in developed but also in undeveloped countries. Lack of interest of authorities. Antimicrobial resistance is a problem. The staff shortage and the human behavior, and I think the human behavior is one of the most important things to get risk factors for infections in healthcare. Next slide. Human behavior and knowledge. You only can change that and make it better if everybody knows in hospital the chain of infection. The infectious agent, the reservoirs, portal of exit and entry, mode of transmission and a suspectable host, the suspectable patient. And infection prevention control strategies, they must be based on these principles of breaking this chain. This is the only way to make it better and safer for the patients. Next slide, please. Everybody knows, but the first thing is hand hygiene. Avoid contaminating hands with soil. So easy to write these words or to speak this word, but so difficult in healthcare if you really take care for patients or for patient products. Minimize handling as much as possible. And I think this is an important thing if we are going further in this lecture about cleaning the bedpan. Education on procedures and education on the proper use of barriers is very important. Next slide. Hand hygiene, I told, it's the first number one, but everybody knows that is a lack of compliance, and the compliance is only 40%. Nurses wash and disinfect their hands a little bit more as doctors, but you see it's very sad in the world. And only safe patient care is, in my opinion, if we have 100% performance of hand hygiene and a zero tolerance. Next slide. And this is what the WHO said with the guidelines on hand hygiene in healthcare. Alcohol hand rub is the most safe method. At every bedside, you should have hand rub. Gloves should only be worn for specific tasks. And if you go to this, gloves. Imagine a patient has diarrhea and you use the gloves. And so often I see that they're cleaning the patient, taking the bedpan, taking the urinal, and with the same gloves, they open the door, go to the next place to empty the material. But in the meantime, you contaminate everything. Countries who committed to the WHO clean care are shown in this map. And if your country is not in yet there, you can see if you go to this website, if your country will sign the pledge to follow these guidelines or intend to go to follow them. But this is important part. People continuously contaminate their hands. Next slide. Cleaning practice 2008. Clean care is safe care. But, and it is not only in the Netherlands, I see it in a lot of different countries, healthcare institutes are not always clean. And so often they say to me, yes, that's because of understaffing, but also it's very difficult to design buildings with a lot of corridors and a lot of doors and a lot of things. And then the budget. This so often is not a priority for cleaning, but for other things. Also acceptance and resignation for the current situation. And then walk through your healthcare setting, the nursing home, the hospital, and look, so difficult to clean furniture, the floor covering, the mattresses, pillows, the nursing equipment, including bedpans. Next slide. So there are a lot of risk contaminations, but here's some practical thing, and everybody must recognize that in the left corner, a commode, and if you turn them upside down, you will be shocked what you see. Then toilets, I've seen hospitals with situation like this. Then even in a hospital, and here you see a picture at the right hand, they have a bed washer disinfectant, bedpan washer disinfectant, but the nurses is in a hurry and she just empty in a slog hopper the urinal. Then the canisters to collect urine from a catheter bag. What is going on with these canisters? And then what's going in the sluice room? Are they cleaning contaminated linen before it's going to the patients or before it's going into laundry? But then, so often, clean items are stored in this sluice room, and so you can contaminate everything. Next slide, please. Microorganisms are ubiquitous in the environment. How is that coming? By contamination by people. We are all shedding organisms, continuous, but also contamination by solids with body secretions. And it can be anything in hospital, urine, blood, feces, sputum, etc. But it is seldom the source responsible for direct transmission. No, there's mostly secondary transmission from contaminated areas, equipment and utensils, because we are touching continuously everything by hands. Next slide, please. So careful cleaning is a must before we go disinfect and sterilize, because equipment can transmit infections to patients, but also to ourselves. Cleaning is an important task and is done by trained individuals. And heat disinfection and sterilization, only if you use that, it is only done and can only done for a good result with validated methods and processes. Failure for properly disinfection carries a risk of infection. We must realize that. And I mentioned earlier, referred equipment, damaged equipment, no maintenance from equipment, and this is a danger in hospitals. Next slide. We are coming closer to the bedpans. Entry Cautions Anno 1489. This is a woodcutting from Germany, and you see in the left upstairs a window is in the morning emptying the pot for under the bed with urine in the street. And we had little small streets in Amsterdam and little towns in Holland like this, and it was a severe problem. Diarrhea was a lot of illness and caused a lot of deaths. So if you go to the chain of infection, we have reservoirs here a lot and portal of exits. But now we are much better. Entry precautions, the next slide, Anno 2008. To the right side, yes, this looks very clean. To the left side, I've seen this in hospitals, and then you are shocked. But is there a real transmission risk? No, there is no transmission risk. There is a little, but nobody will sit on the left toilet. And if you have to use this toilet, you can wash and disinfect your hands afterwards. So there is no direct contact, mostly. Next slide. Are healthcare settings clean and safe? I did tell already it was not, because there are plenty transmission routes, there are a lot of risky procedures, there are a lot of reservoirs, and the cleaning and decontamination methods are not always regular procedures and not always carried out by well-trained healthcare workers. And that's a truth. Next slide. We come again to the chain of infection and then the reservoir. Look at the left side. And we all know that the human body in our gut and in our bowel, we have billions of microorganisms, and this can be a problem. Next slide, please. It's so easy to say, basic precaution in healthcare. Every patient must be treated as colonized or as infectious. But are we handling like this? Hand hygiene, personal hygiene, cleaning and disinfection, aseptic technique, laundry handling, and human waste handling? Or are we a little bit more careful if nurses and doctors know that there is an infection? But so often we know really if we have the results from the lab. So everybody, every patient is suspected and must be treated in the same way. Next slide. I come to patient human waste. Patients, like we self, produce feces, urine, and a lot of pathogens among these bacteria. And in hospitals and healthcare settings, it's going on for 24 hours per day. A lot of feces per day. And with diarrhea, 15 or even tot 40 times or even more per day. A lot of water. And 30% is remaining bacteria. Then we know this fact, and then we must realize not every patient is mobile. Next slide. Handling urine and feces, so normal for nurses. When you start for your first day, you start with cleaning with all these things, and when you grow up as a nurse, it's a little bit less, but it's daily work, and especially some hospitals have nurse aides, but during the daytime, okay, but what's happening in the evening and in the night? So I found a nice thing from Mildred Flaherty, the inventor of the bedpan, and in former times in hospitals they had the old-fashioned bedpans. Now we have different sizes, different material from plastic, paper, disposable. And in the Western world where I live, in the Netherlands and West European countries, we mostly use the stainless steel bedpans with a lid. Then the WHO, the next slide please, makes categories of healthcare waste. 7 categories, and then go with me to the infectious waste number 7. Suspected to contain pathogens from isolation wards, material or equipment that have been in contact with infected patients, excreted with potential infectious fluids or blood. But I told you before, how do we recognize infected patients? We should treat everybody. So everything can be in potential infectious waste. Next slide. And infectious waste can contain all these infectious agents. It's only some numbers. But we must realize some pathogens can survive months on the right surfaces. Gram-negative bacteria generally require moist environment and can also survive for a long, long time. Realize that. If it's not clean, pathogens can survive. Next slide, please. Clostridium difficile in the environment. And they did a survey, and sorry I didn't mention where it come from, but here I made it in red, bedpan, dirty utility rooms, floors, the shoes, toilet bowls, slop hoppers. They were all contaminated, and these were clean, looking clean for the eye, but not really clean. If you could closer, then you can find sometimes rest or features, but these are contaminated with C. diff, and these are we also touching with our hands, and so the circle is round again. Next slide, please. We have to decontaminate, and decontaminate is a process that reduces the number of pathogenic microorganisms from objects or skin to a level which is not harmful to health. It includes cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization. Next slide. Decontamination, you can decontaminate the risk of infection by used items in healthcare, and Mr. Spoiling made in 1968 three categories, the critical items, semi-critical items, and non-critical items. And even now, in 2008, 40 years later, it still used these things. But then you see the semi-critical items, items that come in contact with mucous membranes or non-intact skin. And I will show you the next slide. If you go to the low-risk decontamination, this includes, on paper, the bedpan. But then you say so often that people have a non-intact skin and use a bedpan. And only for this reason already I say bedpans are not low risk but medium risk. Next slide, please. The choice of the method for decontamination is the risk for infection to patients, to staff, is there a risk to environment, risk of damaging the material, and of course the budget. Next slide. Decontamination to cleaning. That's the most important side and thing for all in decontamination. Next slide. Manual cleaning is removing organic material, all visible soil. But what is visible? Look at your glasses, for some who are wearing that, or go to your relatives. And sometimes you say, my glasses are clean. But if you look better, they are not clean at all. So this is a different perception. Manual cleaning is remove potential microorganisms who are infectious and remove soil which protects microorganisms during the disinfection. Careful cleaning must be done by mechanical energy, by friction flushing or scrubbing in the right controlled way. You can use chemical products and you have always used the right method. Next slide. Then we come to manual cleaning. You see a lot of products, mostly used in Europe, but I think in a lot of places in the world. And if you go to the brushes, I still see that this is used for cleaning bedpans and urinals and washbowls and a lot of products in the hospitals. And I guarantee you, this is not a safe product, only if you use it for single use. Next slide. Manual cleaning is not a safe procedure because everybody's an expert, but is that true? My perception can be different from yours, and what is clean and what is not clean. And my vision always when I give lectures, I say, go to somebody's house and go to the toilet. And that makes if you're still friends forever or if you will not be friends for anymore, because it's a visual expert to give you a perception of cleaning. It's very difficult to monitor. The responsibilities are often not clear, especially not in healthcare. And there can be a health risk. Next slide. So I come to machinal cleaning compared to manual cleaning. So common in households, but not yet in healthcare settings. So easy to use. Always possible with standardization and validation if you have the machines. Better results. It saves nursing time. And I think this is an important thing as well. It's possible to monitor the process and the possibility for thermal disinfection. So machinal cleaning, if possible, is much safer. Next slide. We come to disinfection. Next slide. And then we have two methods, with heat the disinfection and with chemical disinfection. And also the choice is the risk for different things. But we must always realize disinfection reduces pathogens, but not all spores. And I know this is a discussion internationally about the spores with C. diff. But my personal opinion is if you clean well enough, there are only little spores, and spores can only grow in a good condition. So if you clean everything, you halve the risk. Next slide. There is a need for cleaning before the disinfection because the presence of organic material impedes decontamination by preventing protection from microorganisms. These decontamination processes may damage equipment by fixing protein residues to the surfaces. And for this reason, cleaning of used equipment before disinfection or before sterilization is very essential. Next slide. So again, thermal disinfection is preferred, mostly done machinal. It is more easily controlled, more reliable than chemicals, leaves no residues, is non-toxic, but also kills most bacteria, not all spores. Next one, regular chemical disinfection. I have problems with that. When I started in a hospital, you could smell the disinfection in every ward, and if you just came into the hospital, you could smell the disinfection because everything was disinfectant. And 30 years ago already, we stopped regular disinfection in Holland because what should be the frequency? Every day, every month, every time when you use an item, what methods did you choose? Is there a risk? We never knew that. It is very expensive if you use too much. And if you see to the left picture, you see a lot of products on one tray. And they were in this healthcare setting, they were used all. And some healthcare workers used two or three products. And that's a dangerous thing. There is a health and environmental risk possible. And there's a lot of abuse because pouring a lot of disinfectants is always dangerous because you don't have the right time, the right doses, and the right duration. And it gives you a false safety feeling. So regular chemical disinfection is, in my opinion, not a safe procedure. Next one. Then we come to the protect the healthcare worker who must clean. And then you see the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report line, the guidelines for environmental infection control, the use of personal protective equipment, proper work practice, containment, ergonomics, and hazard communication. And then I will show you the next slide. You see two pictures down. And this is two different countries to clean and disinfect items. To the left, I think there's an overuse of personal protective equipment. To the right side, the man who is cleaning bedpans, he is only wearing gloves. He can contaminate his face, he can contaminate the environment. So I think there must be written procedures how to clean, how to disinfect. So the results vary depending on multiple factors. And the staff responsible for processing contaminated devices must receive training and wear protective clothing when needed. Next slide, please. Regular disinfection, I told already, we stopped with that a long time ago, but last year our Inspectorate of Health did a survey about the current legislation of disinfectant agents in all hospitals in the Netherlands. They were looking to the most appropriate disinfectants, if they were used in the most appropriate way, and in order to ensure the safety of patients and the safety of staff. And the results were most hospitals are using disinfectant agents sparingly, in line with the guidelines of the WIP, but the implementation of that policy lacks structured procedures. So in Holland also we have to work on that. But I think this you can translate to a lot of countries. Next slide, please. Coming back to the bedpans. Flushing, sink and bedpan cleaners. And I show you some pictures from a very old to a very new one. but I'm shocked that they are still in use all over the world, except in the Netherlands. They only rinse. There's no disinfection at all. And everybody must realize there's a huge contamination risk through splash, contact, aerosol, and droplets. And then if you say, yes, but we can protect the healthcare worker who is cleaning or emptying the bedpan, they can wear gown and gloves and cap and mask. But have you ever seen that in practice in the evening, in the night, if a nurse has to empty it? I think go and check your own healthcare institution. Next slide, please. What's the consequence of all these splashes? Microbial growth. It gives odors. It gives stains. Biofilms. Functional time lost. Life of material lost. And most important of all, risk of transmission. Because all the environment we are touching by hand. If we empty a bedpan or urine by hand, how often people forget to clean and disinfect their hands afterwards. They're going to do the next task. Even in some sluice room, you cannot wash or disinfect your hands. Next slide. This is daily practice. Emptying urine catheter, emptying a bedpan, or to the bottom, emptying, I showed the slide before, a urinal. But there is a huge risk for healthcare workers to contaminate hands, the eyes, the uniforms. But the hands is the most important because the hands touch the patient 1 minute later. There's also a risk for contaminated environment from floors, walls, the clean items around and from all the surfaces, and mostly the horizontal surfaces. Next slide. Then, if you know that I told already, that microorganisms can survive. For instance, Staphylococcus recovered for 1 to 56 days after contamination. So there is a real risk if you do not clean the proper way that you have growth of pathogens. Next slide, please. So infection prevention is so simple. Give microorganisms no chance to grow, no chance to spread and transfer. Keep it clean and keep it dry. But is the environment in healthcare clean and dry? This is just two pictures. A floor in a sluice room. Look at this. When you hold it back away, there's blood, the rest of something in the corners, and maybe they are for weeks. So this can be a source. And here, the right side, you can see how to store. But this is not a clean place to store clean items. Go and look for yourself in your own institution. Next slide. Guidelines for environmental infection control and healthcare from the CDC. There is adherence to proper use of disinfectants, proper maintenance of medical equipment that use water, and then they call the automatic endoscope reprocessors or the washer disinfectants. And I think so often literature about endoscope reprocessors, the washer disinfectants. But it's very seldom that you find about bedpan washer disinfectant material. And even in the CDC, I couldn't find anything about bedpan washer disinfectant. Next slide, please. But now we have washer disinfectants, an international standard, 15883. And it is in five parts, and part three, requirements and tests for washer disinfectants for human waste containers. And they have articles about emptying the material, flushing the material, cleaning the material, thermally disinfecting, rinsing, and also very important, drying. It's intended for reuse such as bedpans, urine bottles, suction bottles, washing bowls, etc. Next slide. These washer disinfectants promote to empty human waste containers automatically, and I fully agree with that. A long time ago, I was brought in this working group about this European or international washer disinfectant part. Only where equipment does not provide automatic emptying facilities, extra care is needed by the user to avoid exposure to human waste and contamination of the work environment, including the generation of aerosols. But how to do that? That's very, very difficult. So I prefer automatically emptying and cleaning, disinfecting and drying. Next one. And that brings me to the washer disinfection. They give better results than manual reprocessing. They all give thermal disinfection. They are standardized. They are validated. They must be validated. They protect the healthcare worker from exposure from infected material, potential infected material, but also from exposure from material for using for cancer. Is it expensive? A lot of people say, well, it's too expensive for us. But what does cost all these infections, this multi-drug resistant organism? And this washer disinfectant contributes substantially to the overall prevention of all these microorganisms. And my advice is, it is a must on every ward, at least for 20 patients. Next slide. HACCP. Most of us knew this. Hazard analyzes critical control points. Analyzes of potential hazard in the current process and possible preventive measures. Identifications of critical control points. Critical limits. Monitoring. Corrective actions. And record keeping. It's coming from the 60s, from the US, from the NASA, and it's internationally incorporated into food safety industry and in hospitals. But this principle you can use for every process in hospital, for disinfecting endoscope, but also for disinfection bedpans. So HACCP for the washer disinfection. The maintenance of correct parameters to ensure a safe cleaning and disinfection. You must have steam or hot water, there must be enough water supply, the temperature must be alright, duration time, the loading, written records, and visual inspection and audit is an important part. Next slide. Audit, regular. And to the left slide, that was me some years ago, in the very left, smelling at a urine bottle. And it smells terrible. Try to do it. Sometimes we offer a urine bottle or bedpan as clean to a patient. If we have to use it yourself, we should refuse it. But sometimes it happens in hospital. So smell to it. Is it clean? Sometimes some people say we have to do a microbial check, but I think that's too expensive. And before you have the results, it's too late. So a visible check you have to start with. No features rest, no urine rest, no ointments, no discoloration, and no lime scale. In all the items used for the patient, but also into the bedpan washer. Next slide. You have to do it minimal once a year on every ward. And I could do it because we had that many infection control professionals. But you don't need to do it yourself. You can use a link nurse or a person chosen by management who can do it on their own ward. You can also do it, you have to do it with outbreaks. You can use a checklist. You must use a checklist. You must look at the loading procedures and you must look at the maintenance. Next slide. Some results. This is a bedpan washer. Never cleaned for years, and you see dark spots inside the washer disinfector. I asked in my hospital, this was a picture in my hospital, who is responsible for cleaning inside. I gave different results. Some said, well, the cleaning department. The cleaning department said, well, no, that is for the technician. The technician said, well, of course not, this is for the nurses. So it has to be clear who is responsible to clean the inside. Because cleaning is a source for microorganisms, not clean sources, but also it stops the water flush. I go to the next slide. So you have to clean and maintenance regularly. And this is on the same day on a different ward. And here you see they have regulations. It looks, this machine was more than 6 years old and it looks as if it was new. There was a program in it. You have to make sure who is doing it, when and how. Next slide. But also check the validation and maintenance. I had a problem in one of my disinfectors that there was not high temperature. How come? It was validated, they told me. And I forgot to check the results, and that was my fault. When I ask for this particular washer disinfection, what's going on? And then you see a water pipe at the left, and the right is one part of the pipe was with the beginning to connect the water to the machine to turn complete the pipe around, and no water, no hot water was coming through. This can happen everywhere. Check the reason why the temperature is not okay. Next slide, the loading. Every nurse knows how to load. Different hospitals, different procedures. But here you see, left is my own hospital, right is another hospital. But some nurses think, oh, we can use and put more things in it. But if you go to the horizontal items, they never are cleaned and disinfected inside. If you push too much inside, never ever will be a real cleaning process. Next slide. The storage afterwards. Clean and dry, remember, important infection prevention. It protects against recontamination. And the right side you see buttons, and if the bottles are not completely emptied and there's water in it, it's a real heaven for microorganisms. So check if it's okay, like downstairs, it has to be upstairs down. Then to the left side, this was an amazing thing. In this hospital, they had plastic bedpans, and after putting them in the washer disinfector, what was not validated, as far as the nurse knew, and was not controlled, she didn't know the temperature, and they didn't dry afterwards. They said, well, if we show the difference to clean between the clean and the dirty used bedpans, we wrap everything in a plastic sack. So we know these are the cleans. And I'm saying, well, please open this for me, please. And left to on the bottom, I was very shocked. Maybe you see it. I hope you will see it. You see the big drops. It was not dry at all. And that's such an important part. How cleaner and how drier, how more bad it is for the microorganism to survive. Next slide. Some people said, yes, in that case you can better use macerators. Yes, I think they can be useful, but they are not used in the Netherlands, and so I do not have any personal experience with that. But what I know, what I've seen in different hospitals, a huge storage of disposable bedpans and urinals, and sometimes there is delay in delivery, and the bedpans are not covered. So I don't know what the costs are for it, and my opinion is, to make sure you have definitely a bedpan and urinal for use for the patient, you can better use the reusable ones. Next one. Complete different picture. Dirty operating shoes. People sometimes walking through it, through the hospitals, and everybody is shocked. And they call me, Gertie, this is not acceptable, this is dangerous, look at this. But I can tell you, these shoes are less dangerous as dirty bedpans. Next slide. So we have to optimize the cleaning and disinfection procedures. And then I learned from Professor Dr. Andreas Vos, a very well-known professor in Holland. He said, the mind wants change, the head wants progression, and the heart wants to keep what it got. Yes, we always did so, and why to change? And the reasons people don't want to change for optimized cleaning and disinfection is they say, well, we don't know the procedures. Education is the answer. If they say we don't have the facilities, then you have to looking for system change. If they say I don't do it or I will not do it, you have to motivate these people. Next slide, please. Coming to education. This must be regular, not only once in 5 years. Regular is, in my opinion, at least twice a year. To all healthcare workers handling bedpans, to cleaning staff handling bedpans, the chain of infection and preventive measures must be included. Including must also be hand hygiene, and including must avoid contaminating hands and minimize handling. Motivation. Integrate infection prevention in patient safety department. This is the answer nowadays. Patient safety is a hot issue. Use this. Water disinfectors are safer for patients and healthcare workers. It saves time, and nurses have to realize their specific role in preventing infections. nurses can play an important role in demanding for washing disinfectants and use the industry cooperate and work together. Next slide. System change. Practical and payable approach is needed for decontamination bedpans. Use the HACCP. Restrict disinfectants and include the managers. Managers must consider washer disinfectant on each ward as part of infection prevention and safety program, so they must save money for it, for the budget. Next slide. Nurses' hands are made for care, not for cleaning bedpans. Next slide. Budget for bedpan washers. I know it's not on the budget priority list, but we have demand for it. And then, it's not my words, but from Gandhi from India, if you demand, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you. But realize, then you win, and in the end, the patient will win, because it will be safer for him or for her. And realize, we as healthcare workers can be a patient tomorrow. Next slide. Decontamination, human waste containers, bedpans, manual, environmental, and by the hands. Methanol, there is no contamination risk. Emptying, manual by hands, again, contamination risk. Methanol, automatically. Cleaning, flushing, and drying, all manual, there is a risk. Methanol, automatically, without any risk. Detergent dosage is uncontrolled if you do it manual, and then it can be very expensive. Methanol is controlled. Disinfection, thermal is the best. Next slide. Contamination risk, you can have residuals for chemotherapeutic agents. If you do it manual, there is a risk for contamination. Methanol, there is no risk. Drying. Have you seen the towels where you dry the bedpans? Or is everybody using a clean the towel for every bedpan? Then it should be better. Automatically dyeing is much safer. The cost at the last, manual, yes, it should be cheaper. But what are the costs of nurses? But they are still on the ward, a lot of people say. They are there. Methanol is more expensive, but also more safe. Next slide. Safe handling human waste at any patient, at any time. Even lacking resources, if one focuses on the true risk, a safe and effective program can still be achieved. And this is a nice poster with the oil, with the bird, and I got them from Paul Weber. You can free download them from the web. Who helps prevent infections? And then I can say, you. Thank you very much from a nice and sunny the Netherlands. Thank you.
Thank you, Gertie. I remember the very first time that we met, and I think the very first dinner that we had together, we talked over dinner about feces management. I thought, this is a woman I'm going to like. Thank you very, very much. That was a very interesting presentation. I would like to thank all of you for joining us. If you have a question, Gertie put her email address on the title slide. You are, I presume, therefore, welcome to send your questions to her. And if you would like to send them to me, you are welcome to do that as well, and I can forward them on to her. I'd like to, before I close, thank our sponsors, Arjo. These folk have done great things for teleclass education and for infection control education, and I'm very grateful to them for sponsoring this teleclass. Thanks to all of you for joining us, and Gertie, a special thanks. As always, you did a spectacular job, and it's very good to hear your voice. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So everyone else, until we meet again, goodbye.